Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers, those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the podcast. Today's episode is truly special to me because I'm joined by a VIP guest, Maxine Tomlinson. And if you couldn't already guess from the surname, Maxine is my auntie. So hello, Auntie Maxine, and welcome. Before I allow you to introduce yourself, I'd just like to say to everybody that Auntie Maxine is a senior public servant, a writer, and also a rainmaker. So as you can imagine, excitement levels are on 100 here. Auntie Maxine, why don't you introduce yourself for the benefit of the listeners?
And hello, Davinia. VIP, I hope that means very important person and not very irritating person, because there is an intersection between the two. How do I explain myself? So many words and so little time. Yeah, so I'm Maxine. I'm a senior public servant. I have a background in political leadership. I'm of Jamaican heritage. I'm the youngest of 6 children and grandmother to 2. And there is just so much more. I love art, literature, culture, music. My interests are many and varied. Probably what people will see or say more about me is my love of children. I've got a real passion for children and the future development of them, the earth and the planet. I don't know if I've missed anything out, Davinia.
Oh my gosh. I mean, the thing is, you are one of the most eclectic people, or a person with some of the most eclectic interests I know. But the one thing that always strikes me, even as you're saying it, and obviously I know you, is that you're a grandmother of 2. And I know that there were many other rainmakers, you know, week after week when we'd get together, that, you know, wanted you to adopt them. So clearly, you know, what you say about your love of children, and this is something that runs through our entire family, you know, really resonates. People feel that energy radiating off you, irrespective of their age, because obviously the rainmakers are not children. So let's get into it. So one of the things that, you know, you and I always talk about is, you know, legacy, community and power of tribe. And this is, you know, a theme that comes through very strongly through the Rainmaker community. It's one of the things that I love most about working with all of the very special women that are part of the membership. But whenever I think about this, you know, sentiment in particular, this Maya Angelou quote springs to mind, which is, "I come as one, but stand as 10,000. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, Auntie Maya, amongst others, you're just a giant, isn't she? And that quote really encapsulates my thinking in terms of the power of the tribe. And you really can't underestimate that. You really can't underestimate the power that comes from almost a circle, in this context of women, having your back, picking you up, cheering you on. I'd probably add to that, or sort of, as you know, Davinia, when I'm thinking, I look up. So I'm looking up at the ceiling as I'm saying this. I'd probably also add, you know, sort of the ability to believe in oneself, the ability to always come back to self.
Definitely.
Because if you can't come back to self, when actually, how are you going to reach out to the power of the tribe? So I think the two kind of segues.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think without getting too woo, you know, this idea of, you know, having a clear and strong identity and placing yourself at the center of everything so that you're able to project your very best self to the people around you in support of community, in support of family, and in, you know, the, you know, perpetual upliftment of other people. It starts with you being able to do that for yourself, first of all. And one of the things I always say is about the importance of being your own cheerleader. And I think, you know, that very much resonates based on what you've just said. So thank you for that. I mean, in many ways, Auntie, and obviously I have the great privilege of having direct access to you all the time, which is probably really irritating for you, but it's a joy for me. But in many ways, you are a real unicorn, you know, and by that I mean, you know, you're a Black British Jamaican woman, a senior public servant, an MBA holder, a prospective PhD candidate who just so happens to be gay. How do you reconcile these different strands of your identity, you know, particularly given what we've just discussed about, you know, the importance of placing yourself at the center? You know, how are you received given, you know, and even when we consider some, you know, when in your introduction, when you outlined all of the different strands of things that you're interested in, this is what I mean by unicorn, really, that you, you know, you cannot be boxed into any one category. How do you think you were received? You know, how do you pull everything together?
That's a really interesting question, particularly where I am now. As you know, I'm doing Master of Arts in Black Studies as the entrance point to the PhD, and I've literally just started a module that is looking at intersecting identities, and that's been a real eye-opener to me, because now I'm putting the theory to my practice, which is odd because we often put the theory first and then think about the practice. But for me, the intersecting identities is my lived experience. So it's kind of, and it's been difficult. It's been difficult. It's been a tough journey. And if I'm honest, I'm only now truly embracing it and truly celebrating it, you know, all the different identities and the path that I've walked in terms of, you know, the embracement of Maxine. God, that sounds like a book. The embracement of Maxine is actually refusing, you know, absolutely refusing to shut down one part of myself to please other people. So, you know, for example, going into the workplace, I'd you know, sort of project my professionalism, my intellect, but I may suppress, you know, my sexual orientation or, you know, the fact that my political ideology may not be welcome in that space. In the family arena, again, I might project, you know, Mad Max, but suppress, again, my sexual orientation. So it's kind of been a carousel of what do you take on, what do you take off? You know, Frantz Fanon, you know, sort of Black Skins, White Masks. There's a whole book that you can write about the mirrored of masks that one wears. So it has been a long journey and it will be a continual journey. But there's joy. There is joy in celebrating that.
Oh, I absolutely love that. And, you know, the thing that really leaps out for me is the masks that we wear. And that book that you referenced, I mean, groundbreaking and iconic work. I'll drop it in the show notes in case anybody's interested. But, you know, of course, he was speaking specifically through the lens of race. But the idea of the different masks we wear and how they manifest themselves in all different aspects of our lives. You know, you gave a good example there when you were talking about your experience from a professional perspective and how, you know, we feel that, you know, you put on one mask as you walk through the door and you take it off and leave it at the door when you're going into your house and put on a completely different mask. And, you know, as women, or as individuals, but certainly as women, there are so many different masks and different layers to our personalities. And I think sometimes, whether it's through societal pressures or pressures that we place upon ourselves, from family pressures or what have you, we can feel that we have to keep a mask on, even when it starts to feel uncomfortable or it doesn't really fit anymore or it looks ugly, but we keep it on because that's what other people want us to wear and what they're expecting of us. So it's really nice to hear you, you know, at the end of, you know, your response, talk about the joy that you found in the journey now that you've reached a point of acceptance, which I think has to be, you know, ultimately the holy grail of achievement for any of us, feeling that we can accept ourselves. So you touched on this point about intersectionality, and I think, you know, lots of these things take hold and become really zeitgeisty. But I'm very interested in this concept, and specifically the intersection between race, gender, and identity. And from your perspective, your refusal to be bound to any one title or set of expectations. So, you know, we've talked about your influences and the fact that they span art, culture, nature, literature. You're an author, you're a songwriter, among other things. And you live your life in a way that's completely unbound and free. And I think one of the challenges many women face is how to live their truths, you know, well into their adulthood, because they're worried about what others might think of them. And of course, you know, you being a rainmaker will know, you know, more than most, that living life on your own terms is something that we guard very fiercely through our mission. What does living life on your own terms mean to you? And is it something that you have always embraced?
An interesting question. If I'm going to start at the end, you know I'm contrary, so, you know, I'll just
do your thing, Auntie.
Have I always done that? Have I always embraced it? No, I haven't always embraced it. But looking back, you know, sort of on the last 21 years of my life, plus a little bit of tax, I recognize that I've always been different, and I've always been, I'm going to say, maybe a quiet, in my own way, live in a quiet revolution. I just cannot, you know, I don't know if it's a refusal. I don't know if it's ancestral. I don't know if it's just in the genes, but I just cannot sit in a box with everyone else if there is no critical thinking.
Sorry, just to interrupt you there. I feel like that has to be in the Tomlinson genes, because we are extremely contrary. We are contrarians by nature, yourself, I would say. Yeah.
We are. So there's definitely that there. But living life on my own terms is something that I've always done. Moved from Birmingham to London to Toronto, back to London to the West Midlands, back to Birmingham. Case in point, for example. It's not necessarily going wherever the wind blows, but and we had this conversation, didn't we, Davinia, about actually if you don't accept the challenges, if you don't seek out the adventures, you potentially live a life of regret. And it hasn't always been pretty, hasn't always been easy. It's cost me financially, emotionally, spiritually. But what it has done is given me wisdom. And in that wisdom, a life fulfilled. And really, that's all I could ever ask for.
Yeah, you know, and this, again, I mean, do you remember we talked before as part of the Rainmaker community about the costs? And for anybody that follows Raincheck on social media, you will see that, you know, we've talked before about, you know, what are the costs of living the life of your dreams? Because, you know, none of this stuff comes easily to anybody. The people that we see who are purporting to be living their best lives, whether it's real or imagined, everything comes at a cost. And the big question for all of us, you know, we reach this fork in the road when we have to decide, or a crossroads even, when we have to decide what we want to do next. And the big question is, okay, what is the total cost of achieving my goals? Exactly as you say, Auntie, financially, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and everything in between. And am I willing to pay the price? And for lots of us, it's a question that we can run away from because it's too difficult. It can feel too big for us to bear. But it's so vital that we recognize that in order for us to kind of reach the next frontier of what our lived experience might be, we have to be willing to A, have some skin in the game, and B, be willing to pay the price. And you know, in your examples, you know, of all the different experiences that you've had, have certainly paid the price. But as you say, you've gained so much more from those experiences. So thank you for that. So now just kind of changing tack slightly and moving on to money, because of course that's one of the things that that kind of sits at the heart of this podcast and some of these conversations. How has your relationship with money evolved over time, would you say? And who or what would you say have been the biggest influences on your relationship with money?
My relationship with money started out really well when I had less money, funnily enough. Well, probably not funnily enough, but certainly I remember I started my professional life, this is going to show my age, as a youth trainee. It was on the youth training scheme, YTS, and we earned, or I earned, £25 a week, and we were given £1.25 travelling. So I got £26.25 per week, and I could do everything with that. You know, I was rolling in it.
And that the idea of rolling in it on £26 a week makes me laugh. Sorry,
I was rolling in it back in the day, and that included paying my keep. And interestingly, the more I earned, the less disposable income I had, because I was spending, I was living my best life. I was doing all the things that I wanted to do, you know, traveling, an apartment in Portugal, or, you know, all the things that you know, I really wanted to do, a nice house, a nice car. But yeah, disposable income was shrinking as my annual income was rising. And that's
relatable.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
so
interesting
relatable.
In terms of where we get schooling in terms of financial, not schooling, but where we learn about financial wealth. And that leads me to the next question in terms of who's had or what's been my biggest influence. And this is not plugged. You don't have to pay me. But it was actually Rainmakers. It was the Academy. It absolutely was. And it was when I really started to think, as you know, you're the founder of Rainmaker. I don't need to tell you about the concept. But it's not just about money. It's the psychology behind money. And as you know, psychology is one of the things that you know, I'm really interested in. And as I started to sit and think about some of my patterns, my influences, my fears, where that came from, that really helped me to think about my relationship with money and legacy. We started off talking about legacy, particularly in terms of my grandchildren, and connecting it to opportunity costs. So we keep saying this is a real theme for me. I love going out and doing other things, but actually I wasn't planning for it. So now in terms of my financial planning, I have a budget around that. So there is not quite a large budget, but I like doing it. So it has to be paid for.
Yeah.
Around travel, around art, for the theatre, you know, to do all the things that I want to do, but it also makes me happy. That makes me happy, but it doesn't come with the additional strain or cost of worrying for me going into the red. So that's like a really practical example of how the Academy has helped me to think through and reprogram some of my thinking around finance.
That is such a, I mean, obviously, yes, you know, having worked with you and worked with the other ladies, that is absolutely what we are trying to do through the membership. But it's so encouraging to hear that our, I guess, the emphasis on not just the practical toolkit and the application of, you know, money management concepts, but also, as you say, the psychology of money. And where do we pick up some of these beliefs? I think, you know, for lots of people, yourself included, it was probably the first time that they take a step back and go, why am I this way with money? You know, why am I so good with money? Or, you know, what experiences have led me to be like this? Is it something that I've just inherited? Or why am I so haphazard with money? And I think starting to explore some of those things, you know, becomes this ongoing journey of discovery and perhaps feeds into some of the other things, you know, because as you will know, lots of the rainmakers are, in fact, all of the rainmakers are accomplished in their own right, very talented, you know, achieving great things professionally, but then there's still this area, this almost uncharted territory around money. But when you start to crack it open, there are so many other things that it relates to. So it's just nice to hear that from your experience, you recognized, or it helped to provide that catalyst for you to recognize how you could optimize your money management and then other aspects of your life too. And so that kind of leads me on to this question about, you know, as from your perspective, you know, as a mother of a daughter and then, you know, a grandmother to two, and from my perspective as a mother of two daughters, it's really important to me that the girls grow up seeing me exhibit positive money habits. And, you know, people would probably be quite surprised to hear, you know, it's not like I sit down with the girls and talk about money with them, or have regular money dates. But what I try to do is to make sure that I'm drip feeding positive messages about gratification, immediate and deferred, about saving their money for specific purposes, about the fact that mommy has to work to generate the money for them to be able to do some of the activities that they enjoy, for us to go out for lovely dinners and all of that kind of thing. And so I am very conscious of presenting those messages in a way that doesn't amplify privation and doesn't amplify struggle, but that instead links hard work with, you know, a feeling of fulfillment, a feeling of joy, and the feeling of accomplishment of knowing that you've put in some effort and as a result you've been able to achieve some of the things or do some of the things that you really want to do that spark joy. So I'm going for this kind of process of osmosis where I'm hoping that they're just absorbing the attitude and the mindset, and then at a later date then I can slot in these are the practicalities around what you need to do, because I think that everything begins with the mind. And getting their minds right at a very early age, you know, recognizing that our earliest money habits are formed at the age of 7, and knowing that Sophia is 7 and her sister is not far behind, now is a critical time for me to be thinking about, you know, what do I want them to grow up witnessing in the house? I'm sure they'll be like, oh, mommy was a workaholic, or mommy's always on her phone. And, you know, we can't cover everything. We can't be perfect in all ways, but at least I want them to know that, or to be able to say as adults, you know, we never heard mommy talking about the things that we couldn't do. Instead, it was more about what she might need to do in order to generate the income in order for us to do the things we wanted to do. So instead, a kind of a focus on what is possible versus what is impossible. But from your perspective, Auntie, what are the money lessons you are actively teaching or subconsciously teaching your daughter and grandchildren about money, would you say?
I'm laughing. I'm going to concentrate on the little ones again. I'll also talk about my daughter in terms of obviously, because with my daughter growing up, there wasn't a huge want, but there wasn't frivolous spending. It was, you know, sort of holidays, cultural stuff, ballet, street dance, you know, so it was always geared towards that, and also having her own money her own money to manage. And as an adult, you know, we still have conversations in terms of needs and wants. And yeah, there'll always be a certain aspect of bailing out and, well, actually, do you really need that? Don't you need it? The little ones are interesting. Well, the youngest one is not yet three, and the oldest grandchild is five. And I'm not quite sure how this happened, but my eldest granddaughter or my granddaughter refers to me as Rich Nanny. I don't know how that happened.
This sounds like Rich Auntie vibes.
So and what I tend to do is, you know, I do a lot of cultural stuff, so it's really important to me taking them to the museum, you know, taking them into different spaces. You know, their parents can do, I was going to say, the fun things. They find a museum fun because we do the children's stuff. But normalizing that for them, and it doesn't always cost a lot of money. Christmas, Christmases, birthdays tends to be slightly more practical. So, you know, bank accounts, you know, first time going to the theatre, that sort of thing. But I'm very keen in terms of gratitude. So really, okay, you've got gifts, it's been Christmas, you've got all these gifts. Can you just write, you know, draw a picture or a card, say thank you. So really appreciation.
Yes, that's really powerful.
Yeah, so it's about not taking things for granted. So, you know, I might spend £50 on a coat or, you know, a pair of trainers, whatever it is, or Peppa Pig's tickets at South Bank, which is coming up. And all it needs is a piece of paper and, you know, some, you know, sort of a pen or, you know, felt tip and, you know, just a little letter. And I think that's the way that I'll approach it. And obviously ramping it up as they get older to make it age appropriate. But appreciation is a really big thing for me.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love the idea of particularly now in an age of mass consumerism and almost mindless spending. And I don't, you know, use that expression lightly, but mindless in the sense that it's so easy for us to order things like, you know, an Amazon order. We're like three clicks away from anything that our imaginations can conceive of. If you're a small child, Amazon must be, you know, like Santa's grotto for you every day. And certainly, you know, particularly during lockdown, it was, you know, my experience of, you know, with the, when, you know, so many things were taken away and we were literally paired back to just trips to the park and trips to the corner shop where we might get a lollipop or whatever. And it was a really useful time for me in kind of observing the girls and seeing how they interacted with money, what their expectations were, and their idea that we could just order things, you know. And this is what I mean by the mindless consumerism, you know, being, from my perspective, acutely aware of how they were viewing the world and how they were viewing consumption, and the ease with which we were able to just, or I was able to just order things in the past and they would just turn up within 24 hours. And I know Amazon still continued, but, you know, wanting them to start to recognize actually us buying a load of things and we've already got a load of things isn't necessarily going to increase our level of happiness. We have to find other ways to be resourceful and to, you know, so our crafting bill for things, you know, materials or things we could find around the house, you know, we started to just get much better at saying, what can we recycle and use it in arts and crafts? And I've got two very creative daughters, so that really helps. But definitely your point about gratitude is a really good one, especially in the age in which we live. So what would you say, you know, as somebody who, I mean, it's like a big shock to anybody that knows you or sees you out and about and speaks to you, but as somebody that's now in her 50s, how would you say your relationship with money?
In my 40s.
How would you say your relationship with money has changed through the decades? So, you know, as you were saying, you started off, you know, in a position of abundance from a financial perspective. But of course, you know, there's almost an inverse relationship between the money you earned and the disposable income you have. And I'm sure, you know, at some point, somewhere in between, it's kind of how did that correlate with your happiness level as well? But, you know, how would you say that your approach, your relationship with it has evolved, you know, in your 30s, your 40s and now?
I'm thinking very much in terms of a graph here, and you know where it started, and then it goes up and it goes down, and then it levels off a little bit, almost like a grief chart. So it was somewhere at the height of success, if there is such a thing. But you know that peak where you think, Mirich, you know, I've really arrived.
Definitely.
And you know, you're doing that and you attract a certain type of people who are up there with you, helping you to spend the money. And then it crashes and you're at that, you know, the lowest point, looking up and thinking, what happened? And then you realise that there's not a lot of people down there helping you to accumulate some money, and then sort of on the way back up, really seeing the value of people, and I'm trying to correlate this to finance. So finance became less important and the people around me. It goes straight back where we started about the power of tribe. So the tribe comes in and then you really start to think about who you are and what you want for the future. And that's when my relationship with money changed as well, in terms of what am I spending it on, and also slightly looking forward in terms of, again, this word legacy, what am I going to leave behind? So for me, it's been happy in the present, you know, enjoying the things that I want to do, but also being very pragmatic about building enough wealth in the future. And again, this is something we talked about in Rainmakers, isn't it? That actually, when I retire, if I retire, I still want to have the same standard and quality of life that I have now. So it's kind of building that picture, learning from the past, living your life in the present, but also planning for the future.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, anything to do with kind of retirement planning is always, it's never far from my mind. But exactly as you say, it's not about deferring gratification so much that you kind of, you know, run yourself off a cliff trying to do all the things, build your career, be an amazing partner, be an amazing parent. And then before you know it, 20 years have flown by, you haven't done anything for yourself, and then you're just waiting for retirement. You know, I always see that as quite a bleak situation to be in. And instead, it's about thinking, how can I cultivate joy at every stage of the journey, but just recognize that there has to be an element of feathering my own nest in future as well. It's not just about, you know, if you were a mother saying, right, I'm going to set up the ISAs and I'm going to set up the trust and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, all for the betterment of my children. And then we leave ourselves behind, you know, we step into this this paradigm in which we view self-neglect as holy, which I just think is a big mistake. And it applies whether you're a mother or not. You know, there are many other ways that we allow other people to overstep boundaries with us. We don't have boundaries, you know, quite often. But as a result, you know, when it comes to all aspects of our lives, not least financial, we can find ourselves in a situation where we really struggle. So definitely, you know, being future focused is important, but remembering to live in the present too. But just kind of going back to, you know, this broader topic and the idea of, you know, you stepping outside cultural expectations. You know, we've talked about, you know, us we are Caribbean, coming from a Jamaican background, Jamaican heritage, and it's not a culture. I think it's fair for me to say that it's renowned for being particularly embracing of differing sexual orientations. It's a very heteronormative culture and society. And all of the other ways that you are, as I say, a unicorn, what advice would you give to someone that is perhaps struggling, struggling to reject or, you know, grapple with societal, familial, romantic, professional, and all of the expectations placed on their shoulders, and to just be who they truly are? Because I think it's one of those things that's easy to say. You know, we can flippantly say, live your truth, be authentic. You know, these are buzzwords you see all over social media, but it's hard for people to do. What advice would you give to anyone struggling? Like, what was your breakthrough, would you say?
Breakthrough or breakdown?
It's a good point. Good distinction.
Yeah, it's tough. My advice. This is a tough one. As hard as it is, be prepared to be rejected. Be prepared to be rejected, because most people follow the crowd. And, you know, there's not a lot of unique thinking. So you have to be prepared to be rejected. Seek support. I think there are much more supportive networks now than when I was younger, and there was never, and, you know, so I'm really speaking on my sexuality now, there was never a point where I just woke up one morning and thought, hang on, Maxine, I think you might be attracted to women. It doesn't work like that. You know, it was something that intrinsically I knew from a very young age. So, you know, you often get people who talk about the lifestyle. I love you, Maxine, but I don't accept your lifestyle. What lifestyle? Arts and crafts, culture, travel? Because that's brilliant. My lifestyle. So it is tough. It's easier now that, you know, younger people, I see them and I'm just like, wow, because they will challenge more. But it's still difficult, particularly, and again, I'm going to speak from a cultural point of view, where for many reasons, and that would be, you know, subject of a complete other debate in terms of where we get these ideas, colonialism, religion, all of that. But there's a song that springs to mind, Bugle, and it's called Be Yourself. And the word, you know, basically says, be yourself, even when people don't want you to be you. It's all because they really don't want you to do what they want you to do. And ultimately, that's what it is. And as tragic as it may be, and maybe more for other people than for us, you may have to cut off some people, whoever they are. You may have to cut off some people, and by doing that, you'll find much more beautiful souls that are more aligned to you and your destiny.
That is such a beautiful response and so on point, because I think all of us, irrespective of the specific challenge it is that we are trying to overcome, we'll have been in situations in our lives where we're thinking, you know, how do I get over this? But then, you know, your point about be prepared to be rejected, it's almost like sharp intake of breath, because I think for lots of us, that's the one thing. You're hoping really that you're not going to have to confront that. You're hoping that you're not going to have to deal with that. But I think for most of us, by the time we reach a certain age, we'll look back over the course of our lives and go, whether we acknowledged it at the time or not, we have all been rejected in different ways. And for the most part, I mean, yes, you're kind of a bit roughed up, or you've got some bruises and knocks and what have you. But for the most part, we overcome it. And when you look back, you know, the thing that we were always so good at doing, particularly in your group and in the program and the membership, was to say, look at all of the things that we've overcome. And we were so candid, weren't we, in saying, oh God, do you remember that time when this happened or that happened and I tripped here or I tripped there? And I think, you know, being in a situation in which we could, you know, just share openly some of the things that we've overcome already, it kind of helped us to see within ourselves, oh wow, like I have done that. And because I've done it before, now I feel better equipped to do it again. So that's really important. But then the second point about, you know, making sure that you are surrounding yourself with the right kinds of people and being, you know, using your judgment around who you want to have in your space and who you don't want to have in your space. I think that's really powerful. So thank you for that. So coming on to the final question then, before we get to our quick fire round, you know, one of the things that we always say when we talk about investing is that, you know, regardless of all the different asset classes there are and the different financial instruments, which of course we talk about because it's part of our toolkit, but when we think about investing in assets, the thing we always say is that we are each of us our biggest investment by far. And you are someone that has never shied away from that. I feel like that's something that's kind of central to your DNA, particularly from an academic perspective, and investing in your knowledge. What would you say has been your biggest investment in yourself, and how would you say it's transformed you?
I would say in, well, you've actually sort of, well, not just alluded to what you said, it's definitely in learning, and not just in academic learning. So it's most of the things that I do brings learning to me. So as you know, I'm studying now. That's really opened my mind in terms of, you know, sort of, you know, so the academia behind psychology, if that makes sense. But even, you know, if I, you know, travel again, one of the things when you'll always see me when I'm traveling, it's buildings, art, what is this? There's always some learning in that, but not in a dry way, in a way that you know, I'm able to bring it back and just say, wow, look at this. And actually, you've just prompted a memory. It's probably when I turned 50. I treated myself to a trip to Egypt, and wow, that had a profound effect on me, just in terms of what I saw, just that whole learning experience, a cultural experience. So I really do think that for me, that's a real investment. Looking forward, I want to be investing a lot more in art, you know, sort of local art. So that's the next step for me, and also to pass that down as well.
Brilliant. I think that's a great place to end these questions. So now I want to ask you three quick fire questions. I'm going to pick them at random. So just say the first thing that springs to mind, as long as it's not explicit.
That's dangerous. I'm glad you added the disclaimer.
So the first one is, money is no object. What are you blowing the budget on?
A nice round the world trip. More than likely a cruise, tops quality, the highest quality, with the love of my life.
I love that. Oh my God. Love a love story. Okay, number two. Complete this sentence. A rainmaker is someone who?
A rainmaker is someone who is unafraid to invest in themselves, financially, spiritually, emotionally, and mentally. Living in the present, whilst also planning for their future.
Brilliant, love that. And very true. And then my final question, finish this sentence. Anyone that knows me would be surprised that secretly I am what?
Really quite shy. Or would most people who know me know that? I don't know.
Well, I don't know, because the Rainmakers wouldn't think that you were shy. So yeah, I think that's a good one. Antti, thank you so, so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. I'm really excited that we had this opportunity. If people would like to connect with you or follow your work, buy your books, where can they find out more?
So I deliberately don't have a website, because that links into being shy and a little embarrassed about what I do. But MaxineTomlinson5 at gmail.com is my personal email. Or if you want to know a little bit more about me, you can buy Musings from Max, which is available on Amazon on both Kindle and paperback. There will be a kind of Musings from Max part two, not quite sure what it will be called because I have to write it. But that's my little plug.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Antti. Wishing you a wonderful rest of your day, and speak to you soon.
Okay, thank you, Davinia.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck, and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time.